Business Sidekick.
Hello guys, it's Justyna, live chat content writer, and you're listening to Business Sidekick, a podcast dedicated to growing an online business. It's a special 27th episode of Business Sidekick, and you know what? It's been a year since I started this podcast. On this occasion, I have a very special guest, and it's Rand Fishkin, a founder and former SEO of Moz, board member at HaikuDeck, co-author of a couple of books on SEO, and co-founder of Inbound.org. I asked Rand about the most important elements of growing Moz, and I'm taking you into a journey from the first steps of business building to more advanced growing strategies. Rand shares awesome insights about growing your business, so enjoy!
Business Sidekick!
All right, so hello Rand, thanks a lot for accepting my invitation. I'm happy to have you in Business Sidekick.
My pleasure, Justyna. Thank you for having me.
Can you please tell me something about yourself and the role you played in Moz?
Sure. So I am Moz's co-founder. I started the company as a blog where I would share my thoughts about SEO and web marketing way back in late 2003, early 2004. And that evolved into a consulting business at first for a few years, and then in 2007 into a software business. And over the last 10 years, we've grown to 35,000 plus customers and a team of about 155 people here in Seattle.
Wow.
$45 million in revenue. So it's been an exciting journey.
Yeah, wow. I have to ask this question because it's kind of, you know, entrepreneur's wet dream. So how did it happen that only a couple of years after SEO Moz was founded, it became so successful? Is it because you started writing your blog in 2004?
Yeah. I mean, the blog, you know, the blog was built over 3 or 4 years, and that gave us the audience essentially to that we could reach with our software. So when we launched the software in 2007, we didn't have to build up, you know, a bunch of marketing muscles and attempt to reach our audience. We had the audience baked in already. And so I think that kind of gave us a kickstart on growing. And, you know, Moz, I mean, I think it was very well known even in 2008 or 2009, but it was not, you know, it's not a big business, right? It took a long time to become what we are today. I think we probably didn't pass, you know, $10 million in revenue until 2011. So 2012, actually. Yeah. So it's been a long, steady journey, not an overnight success.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds amazing, especially that today's interview is the final interview of Business Sidekick's first season. And I'd just like to know, how did you manage to overcome, you know, the problems that every business faces at the very beginning? So my first question would be, you founded Moz because you believed it will be successful, right?
No, I did not found Moz with the idea that it would become a business of any kind, right? It was very much an accidental startup.
It doesn't sound like a proper tip for our listeners.
No. But I think this is how many, many great businesses get started, right?
Yeah.
It's a founder or a team who has a problem or, you know, is working in a market and they see a pain point, and so they try and solve it for themselves or for people around them, and then they make that product or service available to others, and it starts to take off, and then they slowly sort of learn through experimentation and trial and error. And that is exactly what happened with Moz, right? We had a consulting business. We were doing web design. We realized that a lot of our clients needed SEO. So I started learning SEO. And then I started writing about it and realized, oh, there's a big group of people who are trying to learn about SEO. And my writing seems to be interesting to at least some of them. And I got better and better at blogging and covering the space. That turned into, you know, an audience that was then ripe for wanting tools and software to automate their workflows because they were frustrated by all the manual work that they had to do. And of course, we had built tools for ourselves because we had that same problem, and the problem applied to lots of other people as well, especially people who are already in our audience, right? If I was writing about the problem, that meant the people who were reading it had that problem. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a market research by blogging. You know, it's a very unusual way to do it, but I think a powerful one, because you build up an audience, a passionate audience who cares about the solution and cares about you, in addition to validating, you know, that there is a market space for this.
Mm-hmm. And what was the exact problem you had?
Well, so SEO, it historically had been even more so, and even today is a very manual process. You know, the process of, okay, who's my audience and who are their influencers? What words and phrases are they searching for in Google? What content do they wish was out there? How do I produce that content? How do I get high rankings for that content? Why do some pages rank above others? How do I earn the ranking signals that I need? You know, on page, links, engagement, speed, all those kinds of things. How do I make my website SEO friendly and search engine crawler friendly? How do I identify problems and opportunities? How do I see what my competition's doing? And that was all stuff that you had to, you know, plug in a bunch of websites and do a lot of searching and do a lot of manual work, or, you know, write your own tools and software to crawl things the way you needed and export them to CSV and load it into Excel and, you know, play with pivot tables to get just the data you needed and annotate it the way you wanted. When in fact, you know, a good piece of software should do that for you. And that was the problem that our software solved. And continues to try and solve today.
It sounds like a tough, you know, job for one person. All right.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I really feel for SEOs, right? I mean, I do a little bit of SEO consulting myself, mostly for nonprofits or the occasional startup that I'm friendly with. But certainly it is the case that this is an immensely challenging workload for a single person or even a small team. And I think that's why, you know, that's why you see SEO consultants, great SEO consultants, getting $500, $800, $1,000 an hour.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Speaking of money, I have the question that's particularly important for, you know, young entrepreneurs. How can you finance your business if you're just starting, and or how to indicate how much money you need for the start? And of course, how to survive the early years?
Yeah. I really like the model of what's today in the startup world called bootstrapping, where you essentially make sure that you can, through a small number of early customers, make enough revenue to support the even slow growth of your business. And I think consulting is a way to do that. A very simple product that's, you know, low cost, and you have 5 or 10 customers that you know want exactly this thing, and so you build it just for them, and then you start to scale it out and try and find other customers. I think those are great ways to go. And then what's nice is if you have a little bit of money coming in through whatever you're doing, product or services, you can then iterate, you know, slowly on the product, improve it, improve your marketing, and go after funding of many kinds, right? So you can look at government loans, the Small Business Administration here in the United States, or you can look at banks, you can look at friends and family or angel investors, you could look at VCs if you're trying to build something, you know, immensely big, you can look at smaller funds if you're aiming for a little bit of a, you know, more of a mid-sized firm. So there's many opportunities like that, and I like that a lot. I think being able to survive on the revenue that you're already building gives you, you know, infinite runway, rather than saying, you know what, I need $500,000 or I need $1 million before I can start my business. You know, if you can start a small amount of your business in your after hours time, or, you know, if you can take 6 months off of your job and, you know, use a little bit of your severance or your savings or your partner or significant other's income to be able to fund that early runway so that you can just build enough to have some revenue, I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah, I think that many people think that they're able to repeat the, you know, Zuckerberg effect.
Zuckerberg, right? Like, we're talking about someone who didn't have to make any money for years because his parents had tons of money and he was going to Harvard, right? I mean, he was rich before... Yeah. He founded Facebook. Like, it's not, that's not a, you know, that's not the same, right? I think that normal people, have everyday problems, right? They have health issues to worry about. They have family they have to take care of. They have financial stress in their life. They worry about paying rent. You know, Mark Zuckerberg did not worry about paying rent. So I wouldn't compare yourself there. I don't think that's fair. I think it's great. You know, it's one of the things that I think is so important is that startup founders or business founders of any kind recognize how important other people are to their success. So Moz, you know, yeah, I started it with my co-founder, who was my mom, Jillian. But we weren't making enough money that I could pay rent or my bills or anything like that. I was living with my girlfriend, who's now my wife, Geraldine. She paid our bills, our rent. You know, I bought the occasional bottle of wine. That's all my salary could afford. So, you know, I've never owned a car, right? I always drove her car, and she funded those at least 4 years of the early days. I couldn't afford to live.
Yeah, that's the true story of success.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? It's these wonderful, loving, caring people in our lives who give us the ability. They give us the financial stability and the emotional support and the courage to be able to do this. I think it's, just folly when we put founders on a pedestal and say like, oh, this person built this amazing business and aren't they incredible? And what about the people who supported them, right? What about their friends and their family and their husband or their wife, their boyfriend or their girlfriend who was there and doesn't get the applause and the credit, but was there the whole time?
So true. So true. Yeah. And all right. So let's move a little bit forward. I'm wondering if you, as a SEO and content marketing expert, can you give any pieces of advice about what's the most important when you build a website?
Yeah, I think this is where it comes down to being able to know your audience extremely well. And then to know your strengths and weakness as well. So if you, for example, were to say to me, you know, Rand, I am not a great creator of content. Like, content marketing is not my thing, but I am a good relationship builder. Like, that's something that's real powerful for me. I'd say that's fine. Like, that's totally great. Why don't we make your website a very small site? It doesn't need to be targeting a ton of keywords. It doesn't need to have a tremendous amount of content. It just needs to do a great job of, selling those folks who you think are in your target audience on your product or services. And you're going to let the product or the services speak for themselves. And you're going to go use relationship marketing, right? Your personal connections, your emails, your phone calls, your visits to conferences and events as your primary marketing channel. And you're going to do that until you grow big enough to where you maybe could hire someone who could do more content and more SEO for your site. And I think that's a fine thing to do. There's not one formula for a successful website or one formula for a successful web marketing strategy. It is all about identifying what works, what resonates with your audience and your audience's influencers, and about recognizing where you can contribute unique value in your ecosystem.
And that's funny because so many people are telling that if you want to have a successful website, you have to have, you know, beautiful copy, fantastic, you know, pictures, awesome navigation and website architecture and blog, of course, blog. For example, you end up with a company, you know, you're selling socks and you're running a fashion blog and everything at the beginning.
Yeah. You know? I mean, if you're a fashion blogger who loves writing, who loves the space, who's wonderful at coverage, who gets attention, and you know that's how you build your audience, great, do that and then also be selling socks, right? But if you are someone who is passionate about the business of selling socks and the manufacturing of them and the creation of them, and you know your marketing strength is in email, or your marketing strength is in relationships, your marketing strength is in video, your marketing strength is in social media, fine, use those channels. Don't feel like you, because everyone says, oh, a blog is important, that you have to have one. A blog is one tactic, but you don't need it. Twitter is one tactic, but you don't need it. Facebook is one tactic. You don't need it. I mean, I would recommend that you claim your Facebook and Twitter profiles so that later on, if you choose to invest in them, you own them and have them. But I would not posit that those are, that any marketing tactic is a default.
The funny thing I'm thinking is that your tactic is kind of think big, start small. And that's something, and that's something I don't hear about often, you know?
I love that. Think big, start small. I'm writing that down. That'll be the title of my next book.
Oh, I'll send you my bill.
Speaking about content marketing, market is so saturated. There are so many blogs, even so many podcasts. And do you think that it's still possible to sell with content marketing and to become an expert thanks to content marketing?
Absolutely. I don't think a saturated field simply means that it's more difficult to stand out. But it also means that there's a much bigger audience to reach, right? So 10 years ago, there were only a handful of, well, there was a good handful of popular SEO blogs. Today, there are many, many more, but the audience is also, you know, 5 to 10 times the size that it was. So I think the opportunity is very exciting. And I know, dozens of people, at least, maybe hundreds, who started, you know, a podcast or a video series or a new blog or a new website in the space or a social account that's become very popular and very successful in only the last few years. It is a barrier to entry, right? Because the space is so saturated. But if you have unique value that you can provide and this is the channel that you want to build strength in and you have passion around it, I would certainly urge you to invest. My caveat to that is don't assume that it's going to work the first time you try it. Don't assume that it's going to work in the first month or the first 6 months. Give yourself a couple of years to get good at any tactic you want, especially a content marketing type of tactic, which is really about, you know, learning your audience and learning your writing style, learning your content creation style, and, you know, iterating and iterating and getting better and better. I think it's so dangerous when people assume that, we've been blogging for 3 months. We haven't had any success with it. We're throwing in the towel.
It happens so often.
Yeah, it does. And it's crazy to think that way. I mean, Moz's blog was not successful in its first year. It was barely successful in its first two. You got to give it a lot of time.
And how do you measure the success?
I think that thankfully is a little bit easier today than it has been in the past. There's, you know, sort of three things I'd look at. I'd look at raw traffic and engagement, right? So time on site and pages per visit and all those kinds of things. I'd look at your conversion rates, so you can see when people are coming to your content, whether they are converting to, you know, whatever it is, your contact page or filling out a form to get more information or signing up for your product or your free trial, or putting in their credit card, whatever it is. And then you can also do that with multi-visit analytics, so multi-touch analytics. And that's more complicated to set up, but certainly possible, both in something like a free tool like Google Analytics or more complicated tools like Kissmetrics or Mixpanel or Omniture or what have you. And then you can see, you know, oh, people visit my site 6 or 7 times on average before they sign up for a credit card free trial. And here's the pages on average they tend to visit. And here's the contribution of those pages. It's a little bit of a challenge, but certainly worth doing if you are trying to build up a big funnel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so content marketing is one thing that can help you to gain more website visitors. And are there any tactics that you would, you know, suggest checking, like paid ads or maybe social media, perhaps?
Yeah, I personally love social. I think it's a great way to build an audience and to gain an influential following. I think it does work really, really well in combination with content, at least some content. Right, because you want your website to be able to be the next logical step that people have once they get interested in what you're sharing on social. But you can do that in many ways, right? That could be driven by coupons or discounts, or free tools, or a sign up for a free webinar, or fill out this form to get in touch, whatever it is. Get a demo, that kind of thing. It doesn't have to be a giant website. It just needs to be the central place that people go to after they, you know, check you out on social. But social is great amplification and reach channel. I like paid ads, but paid ads tend to work well when you already have a functioning funnel of some kind. So if your organic traffic is doing well, paid tends to do quite well. If your organic traffic is small or non-existent and you're not doing too well with it, you generally struggle with paid as well. And I think that comes down to, you know, if your brand is not well known, if you don't have some type of an audience through other channels, whether that's email or search or social or content, it's really tough to convince someone to buy from you on their first experience with your brand. It's much easier if they visited your website three or four times, they've heard some good stuff about you, and maybe their friend said something nice, then you tend to convert well. But pretty tough to convert on a first visit or on a first brand touch.
Mm-hmm. So you think I wanted to ask you if you think that the organic traffic is the best source of traffic.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when I say organic traffic, there's a lot of ways to build that. You can build organic traffic offline through word of mouth and branding, through events and conferences, through relationship building. You could certainly do it through, you know, traditional advertising, right? Sort of brand advertising online and offline that build up an association with your brand. You could do it through sponsorships. But you need to get those first few brand touches and that positive brand association going, the type in traffic, right? People looking for you already. Or you can invest in one of many organic web traffic strategies like SEO or social media or content marketing or email or, you know, PR, link building, right? Getting good traffic from referring links, you know, barnacle SEO, which is where you sort of like build up your content and your brand on other sites that rank highly because, you know, yours doesn't yet. But you need that organic platform of some kind to be bringing in traffic. Otherwise, I think you have a high risk of failure early on.
Mm-hmm. All right. And now one of the last questions. If I ask you to share a piece of advice for starting and young entrepreneurs or a couple of words of encouragement and motivation, what would it be?
Gosh, I think entrepreneurship is very challenging. It can feel lonely and it can feel like you have to prove yourself to someone. Right, that you're competing, you know, competing against all these impossibly hard to achieve figures. Right, that if you're an entrepreneur, you know, it's Richard Branson and it's Elon Musk and it's Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates, and that's who you compare yourself to. I think that's actually really dangerous. I think that makes all of us biased in wrong-headed kinds of ways. It makes us judge ourselves more harshly than we should. It makes us forget about the statistics that, you know, 95% of startups are not going to return their initial investment, right? It makes us forget that it's okay to fail and that trying and experimenting needs to be its own reward. And I think that if we had a little bit less of that culture of, you know, sort of machismo and comparing ourselves to the, you know, to the biggest, most successful, and instead said, hey, it's okay to build something small, and it's okay if it doesn't work out, maybe it'll work next time, and look at all the skills that I acquired and learned, that's a great thing. So don't judge yourself too harshly, don't judge your peers too harshly. And don't compare yourself to Zuckerberg, please.
Yeah, exactly. I have the last question, probably the most important one. How did it happen that your facial hair became so popular?
Right. Yeah. Well, I started growing out my mustache to, you know, encourage Moz to become profitable again. And they finally just did.
Beautiful calls, you know.
Yeah. So I just shaved my mustache off. I need to update my profile photo. But it did take on a life of its own, didn't it? I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that it became a part of your brand, your personal brand, you know? I was always wondering if it was, you know, your strategy or
it just... Oh, gosh, no.
No?
No, certainly not. I never thought it would grow this long. You know, I assumed that we would become profitable sort of 3 or 4 months after I started growing it, not 3 years.
Oh my gosh, so that's awesome. So one piece of advice to grow your mustache, right?
Yeah, well, it's not for everyone.
Definitely not for women. All right, so thank you very much for the chat. It was a great pleasure.
Business Sidekick.
Thanks a lot, guys, for listening. I hope you liked this interview as much as I did. And at the beginning, I told you that Business Sidekick is now 1 year old. And with this glorious final episode, we're closing the season of Business Sidekick. On this occasion, I'm going to gather all the knowledge you learned in this podcast during last long year and publish it as an ebook. I chatted with many amazing guests and expert, interesting people and successful entrepreneurs, and I will be more than happy to pass their knowledge, hoping that even more of you will make a good use of it. So stay tuned. You'll find this ebook on our website in a couple of weeks. It's livechatting.com/podcast. And if you'd like to stay in touch with me, you can take a look at my writing on LiveChat blog, and that's livechatting.com/blog. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast and making this magic happen. All the best. Take care.
This podcast was brought to you by LiveChat.